This is Mouth Media Network. Amplify and connect.
The more you can bring customers in close proximity with you and or close proximity with other like-minded people, the more that they have that tribe that gets created and the bonding. And that tribe of people develop a strong personal connection because they're like-minded people. They speak the same language. They're part of the same group. Incredibly strong human connections going on there. That builds fandom. That literally, that physical closeness builds fandom.
Author, entrepreneur, speaker, and deadhead, David Meerman Scott is a leading thinker in online marketing, and his 11th book, Fanocracy, shows how returning to true human connection is the key to growing a business. In Fanocracy, written with his daughter, he asserts that attracting fans, not followers, is the way brands need to build their businesses for the 21st century. Coming up, you'll hear about how a sticker on David's laptop led him to joining a business that has had remarkable success, how you can use the neuroscience of personal space to your advantage in business, the techniques David uses to stay centered and healthy in mind and body, and how being a Grateful Dead and NASA superfan has played an important role in the concepts that led him to write Fanocracy.
This is the Million Dollar Mind Podcast. Remarkable stories of transformation and how to shift your mindset to accelerate success. With entrepreneur, scaling coach, and mindset expert, Julia Pimsleur.
So David, it's so great to see you. And I know that you've just written your 11th book. I can't wait to dive in and talk about it. But I want to start here, which is you invented this very cool term called newsjacking, which has now become, it's become this like go-to term in the marketing world. And if you haven't heard it, or if you've heard it and you're not quite sure what it means, it's when you can attach something you're doing at your company or in your world to a breaking news story and amplify whatever you have going on, kind of riding on the coattails of this breaking story. It was such a great idea. So you invented that term, newsjacking, now in common parlance. And now you've just invented another term, fanocracy. But I'm going to let you describe that one, because newsjacking, okay. I know well, I've used it. So thank you for that.
Tell us what fanocracy is. It's my pleasure. Yeah. So a fanocracy is when fans rule, as opposed to, say, a democracy, which is ruled by the people. And so I really wanted to have, like newsjacking, a word that could be owned by me, but not owned by me. What I mean by that is I wrote the book, which is called Fanocracy, and I invented the idea called newsjacking. I have both of those URLs, newsjacking.com, fanocracy.com. And so if you do a Google search on either word, you find me. But I am absolutely letting anybody who wants to use those terms, they can write about the terms, they can talk about the terms. I'm not trying to trademark it, which is a really unique way in the marketplace to put an idea out there. And it was really fabulous in the form of newsjacking, because it's now listed in the Oxford English Dictionary with my name against it.
Oh, I love that. That's so cool. And you did that in less than a decade, right? Wasn't it like 2011?
How cool. Yeah, it's been just about 10 years. So thought of the term, started talking and speaking about it. The key, though, is letting other people talk about it. So I'm doing the same thing with this idea of fanocracy.
This is like open source vocabulary invention.
I think it's really important to not try to trademark everything. I mean, I had so many lawyers tell me that I should trademark fanocracy. My agent, my publisher, many other people said to me, David, what a great term. I assume you trademark it. No, I didn't trademark it. I want other people to use it. So the idea for Fanocracy came because I've been writing and speaking, as you well know, about online marketing for about 15 years now. Really well known in the marketing world for having really pioneered these ideas around online marketing, including newsjacking and other things. But I think that too many people are abusing the channel, Julia, and you see that too. You know, like you get on the an email list and they send you 5 emails a day, or on social networks, they're just hitting you with again and again and again. Even the social networks are now polarizing people around their politics or around the products and services they use. So I think the pendulum has swung too far in the direction of superficial online communications. And I think we're coming back to a true human connection. And at the same time,
so how will fanocracy be part of that?
Yeah. So at the same time, I was talking to my daughter, Reiko. She's 26 and she was 21 when we started talking about this. At the same time, we recognized how unbelievably passionate we are about the things we love. Like, I am a massive, massive, massive live music geek. I've been to 780 concerts, live concerts in my life. I have a spreadsheet to prove it. I've been to 75 Grateful Dead concerts. At the same time, Reiko loves Harry Potter. She's read every book multiple times, seen every movie multiple times, gone to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter theme park several times, gone to the UK to the Wizarding World, the tour where they filmed the movies. And get this, Julia, she wrote a 90,000 word alternative ending novel to the Harry Potter series, which she then published on a fan fiction site, and thousands of people have read it. So we decided that our fandoms were what was interesting for us. And we talked with thousands of people and they agreed, yeah, the things we love, this is great. So we explored the ideas of can you generate fans in any business? The answer is absolutely yes.
And I want to come back to that because I want to go way deeper on that. But will you talk about the day that you and Brian met, as I love this story, and found out you had this mutual love?
Right. And you know what? It is absolutely this combination that you talk about. And it was absolutely at work. So I just mentioned, I love the Grateful Dead. So I was invited to go to a meeting at a company called HubSpot back in 2007. At the time, they had just formed, been around for less than a year. And they had a marketing software that they had created, didn't even have any customers yet, only 8 employees. And they invited me to their office because they had read my book, The New Rules of Marketing and PR. And they said, David, you should come. We want you to talk to us because your ideas and my ideas around this company are absolutely in alignment. And they're only 10 miles from my house. So this is perfect. So I went to visit them. I pulled out my MacBook Pro computer as I walked into their office, opened it up, and there were some stickers on the back of the computer. And this is the very first minute I met Brian Halligan, the CEO of HubSpot. He says, hang on, we can't start this meeting until you tell me about those stickers on your computer. And I said, yeah, you know, I love Japan. I lived there for 7 years. My wife's Japanese. And Brian said, I lived in Japan too. What about that sticker? I said, Nantucket. I love Nantucket. I have a house there. Brian says, I go there every summer. Oh, and you've got a Grateful Dead sticker. I said, yeah, they're my favorite band. And Brian says, they're my favorite band too. So what was interesting about that is we identified we were part of the same tribes. We identified we loved the same things. And we identified within 1 minute of meeting each other that we shared not only a love of marketing, but a love of the Grateful Dead and Nantucket and Japan, so that we are like long lost brothers. It was amazing. And so we agreed, we had a great conversation, by the way, and then we went out to lunch. And Brian and I decided a couple of weeks later to go to a Grateful Dead concert together. And then he invited me to join the HubSpot advisory board. And we've been great friends since then. It's now, 13 years later, I'm still on the HubSpot advisory board.
I love it. Yeah, and congratulations that HubSpot was just named number one place in the country to work, right, on Glassdoor.
I know, right?
It's so cool.
Yeah, Glassdoor, that was amazing. So, and they've been a fabulous company to be involved with throughout that time. But that's emblematic, Julie, of the ideas that we're talking about in this book, Fanocracy. The idea that passion for the things that you love, this incredible passion, call it wellness if you want, because it is, it's mental wellness. That passion bleeds over into work. because when you have passion, it's infectious. And when you have passion for something, if you meet someone who's part of the same tribe, then you have an instant bond personally, which then you can translate into business.
I love that. And interestingly, one of our recent guests has a company that's all about helping large corporations have better diversity in the workplace. And one of the things she talked about was, how can you bring your full self to work? Right. So this strikes me as a big part of that. You know, how do you show up with the things you love and are passionate about and connect with other people?
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And Reiko, my co-author and daughter, coined an interesting phrase. She says, passion is infectious. Passion is infectious. And it's so true, because when you share the things you love, even if somebody else that you're talking to doesn't share that same fandom, you're showing that you're someone who loves life, who loves to do the things that they love. And that becomes infectious, and people are naturally drawn to you. And we saw that again and again and again and again in the research that we did around fandom and fanocracy and why and how people become fans of something, and then prescriptions for how companies can tap that.
Well, and you've also tapped into the number one ingredient of a powerful mindset, right, for any entrepreneur, which is passion and staying connected to that passion. So I'm right with you on that. Help us understand when you and Reiko had that aha moment, when we were like, wait a minute, there's a book in this, and not just a book, a business book. What was that moment?
That moment, we were driving in a car 5 years ago, and it was when we were geeking out about how much of a fans we were about the things we love. And so I said, Grateful Dead, 75 concerts, that's nutty. And she goes, yeah, me and Harry Potter, I just published a novel that I wrote on a fan fiction site. So we said, wow, you know, this is kind of geeky. And then I said, I wasn't thinking about a co-author, but I said, I'm thinking about exploring a book on this topic. And so I kept asking her questions, like, she's clearly different than me. She's my daughter, so she's different generation. She's a woman, we're different genders. My wife's Japanese, so she's mixed race. She did a neuroscience degree at Columbia, so she's a scientist. She's now in her final year of medical school. And so I kept asking her questions. Well, what would a millennial think about this? What would a woman think about this? How about diversity? You know, tell me about being mixed race. You know, I quizzing her with all this stuff. And finally, I'm like, don't be an idiot. You know, she's a fabulous writer. Invite her to become part of the project. And I did. And she's like, you want me to write a book with you? And she's like, oh, wow, that sounds pretty cool. Yeah, let's do that together. It's fabulous, because she is a way better writer than me. And it's been a real life-changing project for both of us in many ways.
Well, and you've written a lot of books that have helped entrepreneurs grow their businesses, right? Sell more, market better. You know, I think it was Peter Drucker who said, businesses are just two things, marketing and innovation. So you've helped so many entrepreneurs with their marketing. Why is this book going to help people with their marketing?
Well, the idea of having fans of your business is a fabulous way to grow your business. And, you know, one of the things that we're curious about is, you know, people talk about, for example, Patagonia or Apple as having fans. We didn't look at companies like that that everybody talks about. We wanted to dig in and find examples of companies that are unusual, and that people would say to us, but David, I can't do this because I'm a, you know, fill in the blank.
Right. B2B. I'm too small. I'm not VC-backed.
I'm too small. I'm a B2B company. You know, I'm a nonprofit. We do enterprise software. I'm a doctor. I'm a lawyer. You know, it doesn't matter. People had excuses. So the example I love, because it's so unusual, and I think you know this company, Hagerty Insurance. They do auto insurance, you know, and so What a product that everyone hates. Everybody I've asked thousands of people, do you love auto insurance? Everyone hates auto insurance, right? It's a terrible thing to buy, because it feels like you're just wasting your money, because it just goes into a black hole. And worst of all, you don't ever want to use the product because it means you crashed your car.
Wow.
So yeah,
set yourself a big challenge there to find the fans of auto insurance.
Right.
Why not do lawyers while you're at it?
So I was speaking to McKeel Haggerty. Actually met him at one of Vern Harnish's growth summits. And I said, McKeel, tell me about your business. And he goes, David, everybody hates my business. Insurance sucks. Nobody likes it. So I had to figure out a different way to market my product and service. I can't be the low-cost provider, and I just don't want to spend a huge amount of money to compete with geckos and lizards and stuff. So I had to do it myself. And the way that I decided to grow my business was to develop fans. Ah. So specifically, Haggerty insures classic cars. And so they decided initially, okay, we're going to do a niche. We're not going to do all cars. We're going to do classic cars. And they go to over 100 classic car events around the country every year where they meet with classic car lovers. They provide seminars. They talk about valuations. How much is my classic car worth? They have a YouTube channel with something like 1 million subscribers now. They have 650,000 members of their driver's club. They do a bi-monthly print magazine, all of it to develop fans of Haggerty Insurance. And what McKeel told me is David, I didn't have to invent the passion for the car. All I had to do is tap that passion and be a part of that community, to be a part of that tribe. And then those people are now my fans. And I can confirm that because I own a 1973 Land Rover, and it's insured, has been insured by Haggerty since 2005. And I'm a fan. And when I get my renewal notice every year, I'm happy to pay for the auto insurance for my classic car because I love what Haggerty does. And they're in the insurance business, a business everyone hates.
That is such a great example and a reminder that it's just about shifting your mindset in a way, isn't it? Right? Not from how do I do this the same way everyone else has done it, but how do I find what people love and are passionate about? And then what is the formula, would you say? Like for someone listening, is it about providing lots of value? Is it about educating people? What is that formula for getting started?
So we looked at, we talked with lots and lots and lots of organizations, people who have built fans, and looked for the common threads, and we found 10 of them. And I wanted to share maybe one or two of them with you. The first one that was really interesting to me is incredibly surprising, comes from neuroscience. We spoke with a number of different neuroscientists to learn what's going on in our brains when we become a fan of something. And at its base level, when you develop a fandom, what it's truly about is a human connection with like-minded people. And that's rooted in it's a survival technique. It's rooted in our brains as a survival technique for you to become part of a tribe. Because when you're part of a tribe of people, you're comfortable. You're with people that that are part of the group of people that you love. So when I go to a Grateful Dead concert, or when Reiko goes to Harry to meet her friends who love Harry Potter, you're with people where you share the same lingo. You share the same outlook. You can have an instant connection with people, even if you've never met them before, bonding over this fandom.
Well, getting ready to talk to you today, I was thinking, well, what am I a fan of? And the thing I came up with was language. You know, I speak French and I speak Italian.
As soon as
I meet someone who speaks one of those languages, there's just an instant bond and connection. So that's
exactly
my fandom.
Right. So you're part of the same tribe. So one neuroscientist, his name is Edward T. Hall, identified the different levels of proximity. So further than approximately 20 feet, he called public space. Public space, our brains know that people are in public space 20 feet or further away, but we don't track them. We don't worry about those people. Inside of 20 feet to about 4 feet is called social space. And closer than 4 feet is called personal space.
I think that's just called riding the New York subway, actually.
Well, here's something interesting, actually. Where that comes in is with social space, 4 feet to 20 feet, your brain begins to track everybody who gets within that space, because your brain, you need to know, it's a survival technique. are these people part of my tribe or are they potential enemies? Do I need to kick in my fight or flight mode?
Yes.
And so
do I change subway cars or do I stay on this subway car?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right. So if you walk into a room where, you know, maybe it's a cocktail party where you know people, wow, instant connection, real positive vibes, among the most positive emotional connections you have when you meet people you enjoy at 4 feet or closer, which is cocktail party distance, you get into a crowded subway or a crowded elevator, you do not know those people. And your brain says, danger, danger, danger. And that's what's going on in your brain. So here's where you can use this to help to grow fans. The more you can bring customers in close proximity with you and or close proximity with other like-minded people, the more that they have that tribe that gets created and the bonding, which is exactly what you do with your events, Julia, right? Because you're bringing entrepreneurial women together and you're creating a tribe of people. And that tribe of people develop a strong personal connection because they're like-minded people. They speak the same language. They're part of the same group. Incredibly strong human connections going on there. That builds fandom. That literally, that physical closeness builds fandom. And so for anybody listening in, how can you get people closer, literally physically closer to one another? And that grows fandom.
Coming up, you'll hear about the neuroscience of personal space and how understanding and deploying this can be a powerful tool in business. If you've been listening to this podcast and thinking you might want some help with your own Go Big mindset, you can get a free 45-minute Accelerate session with us, and we'll help you figure out where you're at in your business and where you need to go. Just go to scalewithjulia.com. That's scalewithjulia.com. There's a 20-minute free video training there and a place to set up a call with us. This call could be the first step in getting closer to the life you imagined when you started the business. Mention the Million Dollar Mind podcast. We'll send you a free chapter from the book Million Dollar Women, all about delegating. We look forward to hearing about the changes you'll make in your business after reading it. Set up a call at scalewithjulia.com. Even when people connect at our summit and build business relationships that I'm not a part of, I know that that creates a greater connection to my company, right? When I run into women who say, oh, I'm working with someone I met at your summit, I never even knew they met or had any connection. Is that what you're talking about? Is that part of the
democracy? Absolutely, absolutely right. Because those people are now connected with one another. And they bonded over your event, and that makes that really powerful connection. But there's another aspect of neuroscience, which is also important.
Do tell.
Because some people say to me, well, David, that sounds good, but I run a virtual business or I run a global business. I can't bring everybody together in the same room. How can I use this technique? Well, there's another form of neuroscience. It's called mirror neurons, which are the part of our brains that fire when we see or even hear somebody do something as if we are doing it ourselves. I'd like to demonstrate this for you. Sure. I'm holding up a lemon and a slice of lemon. And Julia and I can see one another as we're recording this. So if you're listening and imagine I'm holding a lemon and a slice of lemon, I'm going to take a bite of this lemon. And as I take it, wow, it's really powerful in my mouth. It's really tart. And my eyes kind of scrunch up. My mouth kind of puckers up. It's my saliva glands are doing their thing. It's a really powerful thing when you bite into a lemon. My brain is firing, but Julie, I bet your brain fired too, just seeing that.
You're absolutely right. Yes, I can kind of taste it.
And, right, it's crazy. And I would guess that everybody, even just listening, is feeling a little bit of lemon now because your brain is firing just by me talking about that. That's your mirror neurons, the part of your brain that fires when you see or even hear somebody doing something as if you're doing it yourself. So here's where this is important. It's important because if you use effectively video and photographs and you crop those video and photographs as if you're 4 feet or closer to somebody, so that personal space I talked about earlier, people's mirror neurons kink in who see that video or that photograph and say, I'm in close proximity with this person, even though it's virtual, even though they can be thousands of miles away. And that develops a really strong human connection. And that's exactly why we feel we know, personally know movie stars. You don't know that movie star, but your brain tells you you do because you're seeing them on a screen and your brain says that you're actually in close physical proximity with them. So here's how you can use that to grow a business as an entrepreneur. The more you can use real photographs of real people, you, your customers, your partners, your customers who are together, or video of you, your customers, and so on, cropped quite close, 4 feet or closer is great, or you know, 5-6 feet can work, looking directly at the camera. This also explains the popularity of selfies, like, because selfies have taken off and a lot of people say they're frivolous, but I think they're incredibly powerful because by definition, your arm is within 4 feet. You're taking a picture, you're looking at the camera. And for many people on their social networks, selfies have the most engagement of any images that you post or any posts that you make. And that's because of this mirror neurons concept. So the humble selfie, believe it or not, is a tool of developing fans and growing business.
That is so cool. And I love the practical application of that. Every single person listening can put that to use in their business.
So absolutely. And put it to use right now today. I mean, it doesn't take a lot of effort.
Well, and so in the book, do you walk people through how they can implement this kind of day to day?
Absolutely. Yeah,
tell us
absolutely.
More.
Absolutely. There's 10 different things that you can do. We just talked about one of them. There's a bunch of others. And it's very practical. Lots of stories of entrepreneurs, how they've developed fans by using these various techniques. You know, I'll give you another technique, which a lot of companies mess up. And that's the idea of let go of your creations. So here's what I mean by let go of your creations. And actually, you just talked about it. You may not recognize this, Julia, but you just talked about this. When you let go of your creations, you let your fans take over. You don't try to control things. So you just said to us that you found out that you had two of the people who are at your event who all of a sudden developed a very strong relationship and were communicating without you on their own. That's the idea of letting go of your creations, letting other people take over the fandom and run with it.
Or Reiko writing the end of the Harry Potter story, right?
That's right.
And she's not going to get sued by Harry Potter.
Exactly right. J.K. Rowling doesn't sue my daughter because she used the Harry Potter characters. It's exactly right. Another perfect example. And we've got a bunch of examples of that. One of my favorite on the negative side is Adobe Photoshop. Adobe makes all kinds of different software, but my daughter's really into Photoshop. She makes art using Photoshop, and she's got a bunch of friends that she shares that art with in online forums and chat rooms and blogs and so on. And everybody laughs at Adobe because Adobe tries to control the way that people talk about their software. They say, you cannot say you Photoshop something. They won't let you say you Photoshop something. You have to say you manipulated something using Adobe trademark R, Photoshop trademark R software.
And, that's comical.
And it's ridiculous, right? And Reiko said, wow, you know, Daddy, everything that we and my friends and I say about Photoshop is like we're a fan, and everything Adobe says we must say sounds like there's some kind of automatron. I'll give you an example on the good side. You know the Roomba vacuum cleaner, the robotic vacuum cleaner? It's made by iRobot. There's a whole subculture of iRobot fans who take video of their pets riding on the Roombas.
Oh my God, hilarious.
It's hilarious. And if you haven't seen it, go to YouTube and just Google, Roomba cat, Roomba dog, you'll find it. There's tens of millions of views of people that people have done of these videos of their pets riding around the Roombas. And iRobot could say, oh, this is not an accepted use of our product. But no, they celebrate that the fans love to do this. So this is just another one of those 10 prescriptions of letting go of your creations. Once you put a product or service out there, you need to consider that you no longer own it. It's now owned by the fans. And the more you let the fans take over, the more they'll run with it.
A show where we talk about mindset. This is all very practical and tactical, and I'm sure people will read the book and get amazing ideas. But is there a mindset piece of this, David?
The main mind, there's a couple of things that come to mind. The main mindset shift around using these ideas is the mindset shift around focusing on the people, the human beings that you're doing business with, way more than whatever your product or service is. So the more human connection you can build, the more you're likely to develop fans. But there's another mindset shift involved here as well. And that's the mindset shift around passion. And the more passion you bring to your work, the more people are likely to engage with you and the more you're likely to grow fans. Like, remember we talked a couple of minutes ago about how I met Brian Halligan. The fact that I was passionate enough about the Grateful Dead to put a sticker on my computer, and the fact that Brian was passionate enough about the Grateful Dead to notice the sticker and comment on it, led to a really powerful relationship that we've shared over the past 13 or 14 years. We wrote a book together, Marketing Lessons from the Grateful Dead. I've been on his advisory board and advised him for the last 15 years, however long it's been. They've gone from no customers and 8 employees to 3,000 customers, and they've got a $6 billion market cap on the New York Stock Exchange. How about that for a successful entrepreneur, right?
Right. Your connection was really around this shared passion.
Exactly. And the fact that you can have a passion for something in your personal life and that can lead to business is something that I think a lot of people misunderstand, right? Because a lot of people try to separate their business life over here and their personal life over here. A manifestation of this I see all the time is LinkedIn is for business, Facebook is for personal, and they don't mix. I also see so many people talk about a work-life balance, which I think is BS. I think that the more you bring life into work, the more you bring work into life, the more passion you have for both, the more successful you become because you radiate that passion. People want to do business with people who have passion, even if it's about something outside of work. You know, if we know you love the Boston Red Sox, or you love to go snowboarding, or whatever, or you love birdwatching, whatever it is, and you know, that passion becomes infectious and people naturally gravitate towards you.
Well, it's awesome to encourage people to bring their full selves, right, to their companies and their work. And I also think you just have an incredible gift for pulling worlds together that have not met before. And so thank you for doing that again with this book.
Of course. And you know, so you use the term mindset shift. And I think that is exactly what's happening here, is that I believe the 20s, as opposed to the teens, the 20s, I'm convinced, is about a kinder, gentler, more human approach to business. I really do. I'm convinced of it. And part of that means fans. Part of that means these passionate connections. And I think anybody listening in on this is going to be more successful the more you can make the mindset shift around doing those things in your work, because people naturally gravitate when you do.
Yes, and I agree with all of that, and I would add that the worlds of business, mindset, and wellness are meeting in a way that they have never done before, right? People just used to say, well, how much does the job pay? And now it's, well, am I going to have a healthy lifestyle? And is this an environment I want to be part of? And to use your words, right, is it kind? Is it a place that shares my values? I think those are conversations we're going to be having more and more in this new decade.
Absolutely agree with you, 100%.
And so do you have any mindset practices that you can share with our listeners? And then we're going to have to wrap up. Unfortunately, I feel like I could talk to you for five more hours.
You know, we could go forever, couldn't we?
Yeah.
What I have in my life, which is basically non-negotiable, is I do exercise every morning, but I do it in silence. I don't listen to podcasts or listen to music. It's in silence. And I rotate different exercises so that I'm mixing it up over the course of a week. I do yoga. I do Pilates. I do weights. I swim. I do good old-fashioned pull-ups, push-ups, that sort of thing. And it's a very, for me, it's a very calming balance between the physical activity and the mental activity. And I do that every morning to start my day. And to me, and I say non-negotiable, the only days I miss are when I have a very early morning plane ride and I can't possibly, when I land at the destination, I can't get to the an exercise place or can't do it in my hotel room or whatever. But other than that, no excuses. I do it every single day.
And you have a really busy speaking schedule, so I'm sure that's not always easy.
Can be difficult, but one of the things I've found has been really helpful for me is I carry a yoga mat in my suitcase. I have a big suitcase, admittedly, because I carry so much stuff. But I have a yoga mat, and I also carry exercise bands. So I can do my yoga. It's not weights, but I can exercise my upper body. And I'll probably do 330 days of exercise a year. And to me, that's what works for me personally. That's just over the years, I've found that's what grounds me, gets me ready for the day, gets the blood flowing, gets my mind working, gets the body ready for everything it's going to be doing for me that day.
Well, thank you for sharing that, because I think a lot of people, when they get busy or they have big dreams, they think, well, I'll just cut out the exercise because I don't have time anymore. But in fact, having a powerful, healthy mindset is in part, right, making time for that and making it a priority.
It is. And I've found that an hour of exercise buys me way more than an hour of efficiency.
And no amount of coffee, right, can make you feel that way.
Not for me at least.
Me neither.
And I used to think, oh, I'll just sleep a little bit longer or I'll just work another extra hour, but I don't work as well. I don't work as efficiently if I sleep a little longer or if I, if I just put another hour of time in, even when I'm so busy, I can't even think, I still put that hour of exercise in.
I love that. And I'm the exact same. I do all different exercises and I never cut that out. I always find something else to cut out, even sometimes sleep, which like you, I'm loathe to give up.
I mean, I'm the same way. I mean, I will wake up in order to do the exercise, even if I've gotten less sleep than I normally would get. I'm still doing that.
Good for you. Well, thanks for sharing that. And is there anything that you have seen or heard or read recently, not one of your 11 books, although people should check them all out because they're all awesome, that you would want to share with our listeners?
You know, one of my favorite books, it's not a recent book, it's an older book, but one of my favorite books is a book called How Music Works, and it's by David Byrne. David Byrne is the frontman of the Talking Heads.
Sure.
And I'm a huge Talking Heads fan. And what I love about How Music Works is it's got three elements going on in the book. It's partly David Byrne's memoir of his life in the music world. It's partly a history and really interesting history of music as it relates to how music evolved based on how people heard it. So 500 years ago, you really only heard music in a church, for example, and that led to a certain type of music. Then you started to hear it in concert halls. Then you started to hear it amplified, and each one of those things transformed music. And then the third thing is it's a bit of a how-to for musicians to how to be successful. I'm not a musician, but I think that a lot of my work, writing books, giving speeches, advising companies, is much like music. You know, I don't create record albums, but I create books. I don't perform music on the stage, but I perform on the stage. So I found this to be just a wonderful book that combines so many of the things I love. And it's quirky and well-written.
Oh, I can't wait to check that out. Say the title again in case folks missed
it. It's called How Music Works, and it's by David Byrne, B-Y-R-N-E. He's the frontman of the Talking Heads.
Well, you are clearly fascinated with how things work, period. And thank you for sharing that passion with all of us so that we can get in on your fascinating brain, David, and learn so much from you. I've learned so much from you in your workshops and your talks, and I've used newsjacking in my business to great results. So huge thank you from me. And thanks for taking the time to share your story with the Million Dollar Mind listeners.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me on. And you know, I just love what you're doing, Julia, to help entrepreneurs, especially women entrepreneurs, to be successful. And it's important work. So congratulations for taking it on.
Well, thank you. You're a big part of it today and in all the ways that you'll be involved with our community in the future. And I did want to ask you, how can people find you?
So I use my middle name professionally, my middle name being Meerman, M-E-E-R-M-A-N. So I'm David Meerman Scott. If you Google me, you get me and only me, because I'm the only David Meerman Scott on the planet.
Awesome.
And DM Scott is my social ID on Twitter and Instagram and whatnot. And we also have a website for the new book, Fanocracy. So if you want to learn more about how to build fans for your business, as we've talked about today, it's www.fanocracy.com. There's videos and infographics and PDFs you can download and whatnot there.
Awesome. And the full title is Fanocracy, How to Turn Customers into Fans and Fans into Customers. Did I get that in the right order?
You got it.
I did.
You got it.
Awesome. Thanks so much, David. I hope you have a great afternoon. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. And until next time, stay brave and go big.
Million Dollar Mind is a production of Mouth Media Network. Copyright 2020, Julia Pimsler.
This is Mouth Media Network. Amplify and connect.